The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the tax committee to order when we have a quorum, which hopefully is shortly. We have two bills to hear today. We will not be voting on any of them unless there's an amendment to put on. I don't think there is, but we have Representative Chair Detmer before the committee with House File 136. And again, members, when we have a quorum, we will break. Chair Detmer, just so you know, when we have a quorum, I will break for a little bit and do a few housekeeping things, and then we'll get back to your bill. Yeah. So with that being said, when we have a quorum, I will move House File 136. Chair Detmer, if you could explain your bill, please.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I guess many of us, when we have constituents that come into our office, many times we sit and listen to our constituents regarding an issue. And I can recall, you know, my 8 years now in the legislature, that some of the best pieces of legislation that I came forward with and passed and signed by governors is information, issues that were brought to me from constituents. I have a constituent with me today, Mr. Gilbertson, but this bill is related to taxation, obviously. That's why we're in this committee. And it deals with sales and use and changing thresholds of for filing requirements, and provide a vendor allowance requiring Department of Revenue to develop an address-based sales tax collector on a website. So it's very similar looking at House File 69, which is your bill, Mr. Chair, very similar to the bill that you're bringing forward also today. So I just called my L.A. To make sure I'm signed on to your bill also. So what I would like to do now is just introduce my my testifier here. And he's a business person, and he brought this to my attention about 2 years ago. So I would like to have Mr. Gilbertson, Brian Gilbertson, just talk about his business and how this bill would apply to his business.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Detmer. We'll officially call, as we have a quorum, we'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Carlson moves the minutes of January 20th, 2015. Any additions or corrections? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the committee, I'd also like to introduce a new assigned committee pager. I'll let him introduce himself here. Marco?
I am Marco Lanz. I'm the committee page. I am originally from St. Cloud, and I now live in Minneapolis.
Great. Welcome to the committee.
Where?
Like we say, Marco, or Mr. Lanz, this is not a committee. This is an adventure. Before we go forward with, I will move House File 136, but just a point of clarification maybe for Chair Lencheski. The governor introduced, now I think I know what's going on here, but it doesn't happen that often that I do. Governor Dayton has announced a child care tax credit bill. I'm assuming that will be in his omnibus bill that he presents. So we'll have that in there. Okay, because that's one I want to give that a hearing, and I guess I'll be giving it a hearing because we're going to hear the governor's bill and I'll be carrying it. So I figured that's the way it was, rather than a separate bill going forward. Does anybody have a separate bill to do that, Chair Lencheski? No?
Mr. Chair? You know, I don't think so, and as you recall, Mr. Chair, the governor proposed that as well last year toward the end of the year, and we had some consideration of it a little bit in conference committee, but I think now it's he's made some changes to it, and I think it would be definitely worth your time to hear it and learn more about what he's proposing, but I think it comes out the 27th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lencheski, and we will be hearing the governor's proposal in its entirety. So with that, again, I move House File 136, and Chair Detmer will hear the bill. We won't be voting on it, so it will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. So, Mr. Brian Gilbertson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Brian William Gilbertson. Representing myself, own Magic Bounce Party Rentals from Magic Bounce Inc. We're out of Lionel Lakes. Good morning, Chair Davids and representatives.
Please.
Okay.
Yep.
So like I said, I own Magic Bounce Party Rentals. We're a rental business. We deliver bounce houses and so on to people's homes, churches, schools. And every time somebody calls me up, I got to figure out what the sales tax is going to be where I'm delivering to that particular day or for that particular piece. So every invoice I have is a different different sales tax. I got to figure out the state, the transit, the county tax, the city tax, and if it's Minneapolis, I got to add on 3% for entertainment tax too. Right now, if I go to the state sales tax website to do so, it's going to ask me what my zip code plus four is, or where I'm delivering to. Who here knows what their zip code plus four is? About half of you. So, I often get customers that call me up and say, hey, what's the sales tax going to be? And back in the day, it was easy. It was just the state sales tax back at the time before the transit, the county, the city, and so on. Now I've got no idea. Even on just my most basic unit, they used to know is 170.40 after tax. I've got no idea anymore. But for me to figure it out, I got to go to the state sales tax calculator. And I also have to open up another window for the United States Postal Office to figure out what that zip code plus four is going to be. For one, it'd be nice to figure it all out at one place if I could just input the address and figure it out that way. Different cities have obviously other different taxes, but I can't even figure out. I can't figure out what to tax who anymore, and I'm trying to do my own business, let alone collect money for the state. Right now, I'm spending more money paying somebody to calculate all this stuff than what I'm actually collecting. I feel for especially when you're dealing with the city level and the county level on some of these. So if I'm paying somebody all day long to figure out the sales tax for June, July, or August, and I'm paying them more than the sales tax I'm collecting, it seems really counterproductive than to figure out some other way to collect money from these people. In my industry, we have a software. I'm not just selling something and getting rid of it. I've got the scheduling software that's also invoicing software, and for me to, I'd have to pay quite a bit of money just for him to figure out all this other, how I'm going to charge the sales tax for these, for all these different line items, the state, the transit, the county, the city. Right now he's got one line item, so if I'm doing Lana Lakes, I know it's going to be the state, and I know it's going to be the transit. That's going to be my total for that line item on sales tax. Now if I want to do anything different than that, I'm going to have to pay a software engineer to put this together for me. We can't just do QuickBooks because I'm a rental business. Everything goes back into inventory for hours later or the next day. It would just be nice to have an easier way, and I want to focus on my business, not on the state's.
Okay.
Chair Depp.
Mr. Chair, if we could have maybe the tax experts that we have in our committee, maybe to give the committee a little update what the current law is, and then how this piece of legislation would change that that current law.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm very sorry that the bill summary was not in the packet. However, this bill does three primary things. It increases the amount of sales tax somebody, a vendor may collect before it has to file more than annually. Currently, if you collect more than $500 of sales tax a year, you have to collect quarterly. You have to report quarterly. This would up it to $1,000 of sales tax a year. So this would reduce some of the filing for some of the very small vendors. What it also provides is a vendor allowance of 3% of the sales tax collected up to $90 per remittance. So it would compensate vendors for a portion of their costs related to what the testifier talked about, the costs of calculating, filing, and remitting the tax. And then finally, it would mandate that the Department of Revenue develop that address plus five-digit zip code lookup table to replace their current nine-digit zip code lookup table.
Thank you.
Ms. Dalton, you said plus five? Zip code plus five? Zip code plus four?
Zip code plus four.
Okay. Okay, is there any, before we get further into the bill, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? I believe the Department of Revenue would like to make a couple comments. Before we go, bring anybody else down. Any questions for Mr. Gilbertson, Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had a question of the staff, and they may not know the answer to this at this point, but, you know, I've traveled, as probably all of us have, to other states and been in other locations where they have, like, a city sales tax and so on, and I was just curious if anybody knows how this kind of issue is handled there. My wife is originally from Charlotte, North Carolina, and we spent a lot of time there, and they have a city sales tax. I have no idea how they handle it. When I'm there visiting, I just pay it. But I suspect if you've got multiple levels, there must be different ways different states handle this kind of question. Maybe we can look at that later, or maybe Department of Revenue knows the answer to that.
Ms. Dalton?
On the back of that sheet.
Is it on the back? How different states do? Oh, this one was just handed out, so
Representative Carlson, I think somebody Ms. Dalton was speaking about the summary of sales tax vendor allowances in other states.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think this is in your packet, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think it is.
There is a one-page sheet that says summary of sales tax vendor allowances in other states, and on the back of it, it actually lists the 28 states that currently provide a vendor allowance and how that vendor allowance is calculated in each of those states.
Chair Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I hadn't seen this. Representative Earhart handed it to me. It answers the question of North Carolina because that's what I referenced, interestingly enough, with my visits to Charlotte. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative McDonald and Loeffler. Representative McDonald and Earhart.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Question for either Mr. Michaels or maybe Mr. Gilbertson. I know that many businesses will have an exemption of some of their materials that they purchase. I know in my business there's an exemption, and then I have to collect sales tax. So Mr. Michaels or Mr. Gilbertson, any of your equipment that you purchase, not capital improvement, but any equipment, is there an exemption, sales tax exemption, at the point of purchase for your company?
Mr. Robertson?
Yes, I guess I'm not sure on the formality to go through the chair here.
Always.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, to answer his question, we can submit a ST3 when we purchase some equipment. If it's equipment that I'm going to rent again or resell, so let's say I were to buy a bounce house, from like there's a company down in Eagan, if I were to buy a bounce house from them, I would not have to pay sales tax on that because I'm going to be collecting the sales tax from the end customer. However, if I'm going to go get postcards to promote my business, I'm going to have to pay a unit tax on that,
I haven't seen the sheet.
On the printing goods that I use to promote my stuff. I'd also like to add some additional testimony too, when that's appropriate, if I may.
We'll go through some more questions, and we'll let you wrap it up. Representative McDonald?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Gilbertson. Ms. Dalton, you had something.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, the gentleman in question can actually purchase his bouncy houses or things as a exempt from tax as a sale for resale because what he's doing is leasing it. However, anything that he is using, you know, for patching materials, for compressed air, for gasoline to run, whatever he needs to do, all of that is taxable. He is not a manufacturer, and so therefore all of his inputs other than what he is actually leasing would be taxable.
Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. So he's not manufacturing air, is that right, for your...
I wish I could.
That's what we do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I share the frustration with all these different sales taxes and wish we could return to a more uniform system. But in going to a five-digit zip code, they don't match our taxing jurisdictions. I don't know how the post office decided to draw their maps, but I think of in my area, the 55418 zip code goes off into Columbia Heights. It goes into St. Anthony Village. St. Anthony Village is split between two counties, between Hennepin and Ramsey County. And so the five-digit would not work with our taxing jurisdictions and the different sales taxes that apply in each of those disparate cities, so we'd have to work on that.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dittmer, wouldn't a fair way of doing this be so we make this revenue neutral, increase the sales tax by the amount that you're going to extract from it, so that we get fair to the general fund and it's fair to the...
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's not what I'm proposing, is to increase the sales tax. What I'm proposing here is to help our small businesses out and doing the work for the state in terms of collecting the taxes and sending them into the state. Good question, though.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not proposing that the idea is a bad one, but I just thought we'd find a way to pay for it. And that is to increase the sales tax that we're going to be extracting so that this thing is revenue neutral and the general fund doesn't suffer and you don't suffer, the retailers. But if you reject that idea, I guess there's nothing I can do about it.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. Carolyn Chesky.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm just wondering if you, I know, Mr. Chair, in the past you've been involved in streamlined sales, and I know Ms. Dalton is sort of our expert on that initiative that the state of Minnesota is involved in. Maybe this is a question for Ms. Dalton, but I'm just wondering some context for this bill and the bill you're carrying next as well. How does the whole vendor allowance thing play out in the streamlined sales agreement? I don't have any idea, but...
Thank you, Chairman Chesky. Very good question, Ms. Dalton. How many laws are we breaking here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lynn Chesky, right now, streamlined sales tax states that there is no requirement for a vendor compensation program unless Congress enacts a duty to collect on remote sellers. And if they do, then the state will actually have to provide some type of vendor compensation. It's based on how much sales tax is collected monthly by the vendor, what the percentage is. It has a cap written into it. The way the cap is written right now, a vendor in Minnesota would have to have $3 billion of monthly taxable sales before they would hit the cap. So the cap is kind of, I'm not exactly sure why the cap was written the way it was, but the allowance basically requires 0.75% of sales tax collections on a monthly basis to be kept by the vendor. And if you want more details, but none of it actually goes into effect unless Congress enacts the duty to collect on remote sellers.
Well, to that point, Ms. Dalton, I guess my basic question is, if House File 136 was enacted as is, are we in violation of the sales tax agreement that you can see?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no. We would meet all of their requirements.
Very good question. It's not that I'm paranoid. It just seems like everybody's after me. So any other questions for the witness? And then I think we've got some other folks here. Okay, you had a closing statement, sir?
I just had some additional stuff I'd like to add, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Credit card fees. With my business, I'm doing all my orders over the phone. For residential, I'm always taking payment by credit card, including the sales tax. And it costs me real money to collect collect the state's money. So I'm incurring all these fees. Nobody's reimbursing me. And really, I don't want to do the work for the state, but I especially don't want to be paying to work for the state. Unless you guys are going to put me on your payroll.
So, Mr. Gilbertson, when you take a credit card as payment,
yep,
you pay a fee, yes, and you're charged that fee on the sales tax.
Correct. Well, I'm charged a fee by my merchant account provider.
What a country.
And I got to pay a higher percentage because I'm doing it over the phone. I don't have a card right in front of me to swipe. There's no barcode. I key it in, so I'm a higher risk to the provider. So therefore, they're going to charge me more because I'm just giving them a number through my computer over the phone.
So, Mr. Gilson, you get to pay a fee on the sales tax you collect.
That's correct.
and nobody's reimbursing me for that. And I'm sitting there, and I'm keying this stuff in, and I'm doing it on my own time, and I'm paying to do so. And that's the part that really bothers me. On top of this, I've been audited twice now for sales tax, and based on the first time they audited me, they would know that I'm a very seasonal business. So for them to call me then a couple years later in August when I'm in one of my busiest months based on the sales figures they would have looked at previously, and for them to say, hey, we're coming out next week to do a sales tax audit, and I told the lady, I'm trying to do everything I can right now not to kill myself. You know, and here I am driving down to
Gilbertson. That may be a little extreme.
Well, apparently it was, because I go to drive down to the Dakota County Fair with a whole truck full of inflatables, and I got the police greeting me at the end of my street because the sales tax auditor, or whoever the lady is from the sales tax office, called in to the police department. And,
oh no!
But I'm pulling my hair on this.
Time out, Mr. Gilbertson.
Yep.
The sales tax auditors called the police.
Yeah. I told her, you're not going to bother me right now. You're going to call me back in November when my season is over. Mm-hmm. Based on the sales tax audit you did last time, you would know I'm really busy right now. I'm pulling my hair out. You're not going to bother me now. You're going to call me when I'm not super busy.
They sent the police out?
Yeah, they did.
What did the police say?
They brought me to the hospital. They brought me to the hospital, and then the police said, we can't make a professional determination, so we're going to send you to somebody that can. So now you're hauled in an ambulance over to the hospital. And then when you get there and the doctor says, oh, you're fine, you can leave. And then all of a sudden I get a doctor's bill. Now, the police department didn't have to pay that. They're the ones that could make the professional determination. But when somebody that could made the determination I'm okay to go back to work, I'm still stuck with the bill.
Any questions for Mr. Gilbertson?
That's why I would want to collect snow.
Mr. Chair,
a snowplow business, don't have the auditor call the sales tax. Or I'm sorry, don't have the sales tax auditor call a snowplowing business when there's a foot of snow on the ground. Don't call a party rental company and say, "Hey, we're showing up next week. We know it's your busiest week."
I'll have a little talk with the Department of Revenue on this. Thank you, sir. Any more questions for Mr. Gilbertson?
Mr. Chair,
Emeline.
I am hesitant to go down this road, but I just want a little clarity. I mean, it sounds like there was maybe a confrontation with the sales tax auditor, and that's why the police were called, as opposed to somehow he was evading the audit. I just want clarity, I mean, of why the...
What he said.
I told her I'm trying to do everything not to kill myself.
Mr. Gilbertson.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay.
It was a social welfare.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The key word in that was not. I didn't say I'm trying to kill myself. I'm trying not to.
Am I losing control?
So I was trying to not lose control.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gilbertson.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer will talk before your next witness. Okay.
I have to help Mr. Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbertson, I think. Okay, anyone else would like to testify regarding House File 136? I believe the Department of Revenue had some comments. Please join us. Thank you, Mr. Gilbertson.
Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I apologize for just coming in today, but I wanted to, as Streamlined Sales Tax and the Marketplace Fairness Act move towards the Marketplace Fairness Act moves towards passage, and we are a member of Streamlined Sales Tax, I just wanted to make sure we're continuing to have a dialogue about some of the issues that might be in this bill. And some of the things that we would need to do at the Department of Revenue. There are some things that we would need to do and comply with that would that would need some system changes to our GenTax, our integrated tax system. We'd have to construct a database, and then obviously working with taxpayers in order to have some notifications. A couple things about this particular bill is that I think we've learned some lessons about starting new tax provisions on July 1st. And so just like to work with you in terms of the effective date, if that was moving somewhere. Also, something that we would, and these are things that we'll work with you, Mr. Chair, on, and Representative Detmer, and Ms. Dalton on as this moves closer. But some of our other taxes use the administrative provisions in the sales tax. They depend on that. So if we're talking about the solid waste management taxes or the liquor gross receipts tax, our car rental tax, and there are other smaller taxes, they follow the administrative statutes for our sales and use tax. So we're just concerned that it could possibly be interpreted that the vendor allowance would apply to those taxes as well, which is, I don't think, the intent here. We also wanted to just make sure that there was some clarity in terms of the time period for disallowance. Just trying to just make sure, you know, if the vendor allowance is disallowed because the vendor didn't timely file or pay. So is that not allowed on a monthly basis or on a period basis? And I think that's something that we can figure out. And then finally, you know, as it relates to this lookup, I think we can certainly see how people would want to have something other than the 9-digit lookup. It is easier. But I know Ms. Dalton, and we dealt with an issue related to Hermantown, where their Menards was, the postal location was in Duluth. The zip code was Duluth, but it was actually on the border in Hermantown. And so in terms of where, and for that, that was a money generator for them, for a new Menards that was built. So we wanted to just make sure that as we're doing this, we're thinking about this in a thoughtful way so that taxpayers can go and access the website and try and get the information that they need to file and pay, while at the same time giving the right information. We don't want them to see a Duluth address or to see some type of an address and think that they're have to file within a different time, a different way. So I think that is something that we'll continue to work on, and something that we're very hesitant about. You know, the people at the Department of Revenue are very serious about ensuring that people are paying in the right jurisdiction, so that that can be done. But again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we look forward to working with you. Again, this is not something that we're trying to say if these corrections are made that we would some, you know, the department or, you know, the governor would be supportive. We're just trying to give some context about some of the things in the administrative part.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. First of all, when you first got here, you apologized for short notice. No reason to apologize, because any member of the Department of Revenue is certainly welcome at any time. I mean, you have to be able to bob and weave and move, and when you see bills come through, there may be concerns, but we want to hear about them. So no apology necessary, so I will not accept your apology. and seriously, any folks in very issue areas from the Department of Revenue are certainly welcome here at any time. We want you here because, you know, you brought up a few things that may need some work on here. So that's why we have the hearings. Questions for Mr. Cummings?
Over here. Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Cummings. I think that many can understand the businesses and the sales and use tax. We're collecting tax for the state as part of our obligation as a business in the state of Minnesota. But we also have some advantages, some sales tax exemptions at the point of purchase and several other programs. Wondering what other programs or mechanisms are there for the businesses that collect sales tax that they are qualified for? Is there other programs other than the sales tax exemptions for businesses?
Mr. Cummings?
You know, I'm just trying to think of, you know, there are various sales tax exemptions. There's also many, you know, different and other types of taxes that work with that too. So one of the things that I know that we heard a lot about when we were talking to businesses throughout the past 4 years was the capital equipment refund, that, you know, you need to pay the tax up front and then you need to apply for a refund. And some businesses were, you know, what we heard from businesses is that that was taking up a lot of their time, you know, that in terms of just the tax, that they had to spend so much time in terms of trying to fill out that paperwork. Now, that is something that I know that was worked on bipartisanly, folks in this chamber, folks in the Senate, in order to try and see if that can be stopped. I know it's now delayed, but I think July 1st is when that is going to be taken out. But, you know, there's also, in terms of services that we try and provide to taxpayers, we do all that we can to provide the needed fact sheets. We go out and do, if ever asked by trade associations, we try and go out and provide information to those people in a specified industry. And I know that we'll be working with Small Business Caucus soon. We were working with Representative O'Neill and Mr. Rubis to try and provide more information about the type of enhanced services that we've been giving to people who remit sales tax.
Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Well, just to note that some of you know that Minnesota is the seventh highest sales tax rate, has the seventh highest sales tax rate in the nation, and it is our obligation and duty as a business to collect that. We understand that, but we are very high and not very competitive with our neighboring states. So I think that Chair Detmer's bill has some great merit. I think there has to be some reward to a business that collects the sales tax, that pays for the very things that are necessary in our state, roads, bridges, the elderly, schools, and et cetera, et cetera. It's a very important tax, a very important money, goes to great things. But we're not competitive at all. And I think we need to reward somehow, in some mechanisms, the businesses that collect the sales tax that go and fund various things that we think are important to the state of Minnesota. I think the sales tax exemptions for companies, businesses at the point of purchase is one mechanism, and I think that we should look at some others that benefits businesses to stay in Minnesota, to work in Minnesota, and to collect tax for the state of Minnesota. So, Representative Detmer, that's my editorial, and I support your bill.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Cummings? Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cummings, and you know, you can try to answer this if you like, or defer it, but it's more about the fiscal note from the Minnesota Department of Revenue that I want to reference, and it's showing a fund impact of $38 million in fiscal year 16, and then it goes on into the out years, averaging right around $30, $31 million a year. And if you could maybe just point out the difference, why we're seeing a higher number in the first year in terms of fund impact, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Well, Cummings, you want to try that, or do we need Ms. Dalton? Is that okay if we go to Ms. Dalton?
Yeah. Yes.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, the issue in the first year is that when you go to a quarterly filing change for all of those people who have less than $1,000 of sales tax, there's actually going to be a loss in revenue from going from a quarterly filing to an annual filing. That's pretty much a one-time loss. After that, it's just most of it is very consistent, but you have kind of a double loss that first year.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cummings, so, and I understand that, and thank you, Ms. Dalton. Mr. Cummings, I don't suspect that the numbers that we're seeing here in terms of fund impact include the cost that you referenced in your testimony in terms of what you would have to do internally to adjust to a bill like this.
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, this does not include a fiscal note. This is an impact on revenue. And so in terms of our administrative costs in order to administer this, this is something that we would work on throughout the session with the chair and in conference committee to ensure that we would have the type of resources needed to administer this law change.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, you know, I understand where you're coming from and the desire to simplify, and I appreciate the testimony from the testifier. And I think what I gleaned out of that was that, you know, we need to do something different going forward, clearly. But I'm really curious where, I mean, this is a $38 million hole in fiscal year 2016. How do we pay for that? And what are your thoughts about how we're going to fill that hole?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Simonson, you know, I just received this fiscal note myself, so it's a very good question. And I think this is something that as we go forward with this piece of legislation and any other legislation that's going to come forward, I think you're going to hear another bill today that deals with the same issue, is we're going to have to answer that question as a legislature. So at this point, I don't have an answer for you right now, to be honest with you, but this is something we're going to have to look at as it goes through the committee, this committee, and as the chair of this committee, it takes a look at the different bills that are coming forward and different bills that are coming forward in other committees, we'll have to make that decision.
Person Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed the beginning, but are you laying this bill over?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And members, as we hear bills throughout the next few weeks, they're all going to have price tags. We've got a $1 to $1.3 billion surplus. I've got $8 billion in requests so far. So let's not get too hung up on how do you pay for it. That's what this great committee will figure out. The governor's child care credit, $100 million here or there every year forever. I kind of like it myself, but we'll hear it, and if we can work some of it in, that'd be cool. I mean, we can ask that question of everybody on every bill, but I wouldn't get too excited about that right now, because it's this committee that will decide, after they've heard all the bills, how we put the pieces of the puzzle together. Mr. Cummings?
Well, Mr. Chair, you said the Child and Dependent Care Credit was $100 million a year. It is a steal at $50
million. Mr. Cummings, that was the biennium?
That was the biennial number, so.
Well, we should double. Representative Petersburg, then Carlson. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want a clarification. I don't see, maybe it's a misprint, but I don't see that this was indicated that these figures were in thousands. So am I correct that this is 38,000 and not 38 million?
Ms. Dalton? We forgot a three zeros, rounding error.
Sometimes they do say, Mr. Chair, that these figures are in thousands. I didn't see that, so I want to make sure that
they're correct. Ms. Dalton, could you clarify?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it was an error in printing of the revenue notice. It is in millions.
President Petersburg, you had a good eye. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when the sales tax rate came up a few moments ago, I wanted to comment, there's a couple of ways that you can look at it. One is the rate that was referenced. The other is what the effective rate is after the various exemptions. Not every state, for example, exempts food and clothing and what have you. So Mr. Cummings, or maybe our committee staff, could you tell me what the effective rate is after we calculate in the various exemptions?
Mr. Cummings?
For the sales tax?
Yes.
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know what the effective rate would be, but I can surely get back to you.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if our staff knows, because I have a recollection on this from a previous discussion that there was something like 4.5%. But maybe one of our staff knows or can get back later if they don't.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I do believe it would be part of the tax incidence study that the Department of Revenue does. However, then if you're comparing it to the other states' rate is a nominal rate as well. So it wouldn't be an apples-to-apples comparison if you took our effective rate and their nominal rate. And I don't know that we have anything that would indicate the effective rate across all states.
Yeah,
Representative Carlson.
Maybe I didn't clarify that. I was talking about Minnesota. You know, there's the published rate that we charge, and then we're talking here today about the problem when you have additional local taxes and so on. But if you look at the state sales tax and what that rate is, and then if you calculate in the exemptions, and I've seen that number before, and I'm not going across state lines right now, but just within Minnesota, what our effective rate is, and if it's not available or if somebody doesn't know it, we can find out later. I just want to put that mainly on the table, that there are different ways that you can look at the sales tax. And decision was made way back when, back, I think, in 1968 or thereabouts when we put the sales tax in, that Minnesota was going to try to make it a bit more progressive and therefore exempt a lot of items. And some of them are pretty major when you talk about food and clothing. And I've never been an advocate of including food or clothing in my case, but I think it is interesting to talk about what the real rate is when you look at the effective rate.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson is correct. We have a relatively narrow tax base compared to most other states because of all of our exemptions on personal consumption. And Mr. Michael and I were just discussing whether anybody has actually done a comparison, because it also, it doesn't make sense. We were talking about, can you use the tax incidence study, and you really can't, because that's an effective rate based on income, and it really should be an effective rate based on consumption. But we will look into, see whether anybody has actually done this, and if we can find something, we will let the committee
know. Well, Ms. Dalton, I don't think Representative Carlson's concerned about comparing other states. I think he wants to know what the effective rate is in Minnesota.
And again, we'll try to find it, but I don't think we have it right now.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, at one time years ago, I asked that very question, and I think it came back 4.5% or something like that. I'm going by memory. But the main point I wanted to make is that there are different ways that you can look at the sales tax. One is the rate that you charge, and the other is what it would be after you apply all of the various exemptions. And that's quite a different number, whatever that number happens to be. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, several years ago, there were two bills introduced, one to include food and clothing, which reduced the overall rate, if that was in, to keep it the same amount of revenue flowing to the state was 5.5. And if you put a sales tax on everything, it was 4 point something or other. That was a reduction at that time. So it makes a lot of difference about what you're including in your sales tax.
Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Representative Barrett? Maybe I could help answer this question. You know, there are different ways to look at sales tax per your sales tax rates and get down to the effective rate, but you could do it based on state general sales tax collections per capita. So you could look at how much we charge in our state compared to other states per person, which is I think is what you're trying to get at. You know, it's one thing to charge a rate, but it's another thing to have exemptions. But we're 16th in the country. 16th highest, so we're in the upper third for sales tax collections per capita. Mm-hmm. So among other taxes that we charge, we're in the top third in this one as well. That, whether that helps or not, I'm not sure, but I just wanted to share that.
Any questions or comments on the bill before us? Representative Carlson?
Well, I was just going to say that was my very point, wasn't necessarily that way of calculating it, other than that there are different ways you can measure the impact of the sales tax. That would be another way. The effective rate would be another. I didn't bring it up. It was another member that talked about our being seventh highest in the country, and that's one way to measure it. Another way to measure it would be the effective rate. The Yeah, I understand, but I just want to make that point because we have this discussion periodically. And sometimes it surfaces in various groups' literature, you know, when they use that number 7. And it may or may not be accurate depending on what you're measuring. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Wells?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is more about sales tax in general, so it can wait until later or I could ask it now.
Oh, heck, we're way off the bill. Anyways, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So my question is, and maybe it's just because I'm new to the committee and I'm just trying to understand how sales tax works. Why would a business owner have to charge the sales tax based on the purchaser's residence? Because I'm just thinking if someone goes to a restaurant, the server doesn't ask, where do you live, and then base their sales tax, you know, on the meal based on where they live. Just what's the difference and why does it have to be calculated that way? I don't know if
I was going out for supper last night after some meetings, and I said, anybody want to go to White Castle with me? And not one. I went by myself. Would you not? I love White Castle.
You didn't talk to Representative Cornish?
No.
Castle.
There you go.
He always brings in a...
That'd be a doctrine. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the sales tax is a destination-based tax. So the tax is based on where the purchaser takes delivery. In a restaurant, you know, if it was an origin-based tax, it would be based on where the person who provides the service is or making the item is located. For a restaurant, it wouldn't make any difference because the restaurant, you're going to the restaurant, you're taking delivery in the restaurant. But if you are, in the case of like this gentleman who brings bouncy inflatables out to people's birthday parties, he's actually providing it at the location where the party is occurring. And so he must charge sales tax based on where that party is occurring. The reason that most states have a destination-based tax. Now, there's a few cases of origin-based taxes, but the reason to do a destination-based tax is it basically eliminates the competitive advantage that somebody, a remote seller, would have. Because if the tax was only based on your origin, you would have an incentive to locate in a place that doesn't have a sales tax, so you wouldn't have to collect it.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the explanation. That does help clear it up. I think it would be a lot easier if we could just switch to the origin-based as opposed to creating this complicated system that's a burden on businesses throughout the state of Minnesota. And I think what you said about the incentive piece highlights that even more, that with our highest sales tax in Minnesota, it would encourage businesses to go to other states to do business if we had that sort of a business or origin-based instead. So just some thoughts there.
Any further questions for Mr. Cummings? If not, we'll have anyone from the audience who wish to testify before the bill or with concerns? Okay, if you wrap it up then, and we'll go to the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Detmer. Chair. And members, again, one thing that a fiscal note or a revenue note does not really talk about is I'm sure that the Minnesota Retailers Association will share this with you, is that how can we draw businesses to Minnesota? And if we can pass a piece of legislation that will make it more friendly for businesses to locate here in Minnesota, of course, more revenue will be coming in. So I'd like to thank the chair and also the committee members for allowing me to bring this bill before the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Detmer. I will lay House File number 136 over possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Item next, President of the Minnesota Grocers, Minnesota Retailers, and Hillary's, you all want to come down together? I will move House File 69, and again, members, this would be no action today, but rather laid over for possible inclusion. I think we... Chair Detmer, you want to... please? Isn't he a gentleman? He even gets the chair. What a guy. Thanks, Chair Detmer. If we could be seated at the table there. And so I will move House File 69, and again, this will be for possible inclusion. We're not voting on this today. Maybe first of all, an explanation from Ms. Dalton. What am I doing here?
Seriously? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what House File 69 does is it basically just provides a very simple vendor allowance. It's the greater of $5 per remittance or 1% of the retailer's liability for each remittance period, and there is no cap.
That was really expensive in the out years. How are we going to pay for that? Okay. Let's first of all, we have three testifiers testifying on behalf of the bill. Is there anyone in the audience, just so we kind of know where we're at here, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns? Anybody else who wishes to testify on behalf of? Okay, thank you very much. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and provide your testimony on what a fine piece of legislation House File 69 is.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. I'm Jamie Poole, and I'm president of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and I'm here today, as you heard, to speak in support of House File 69. The Minnesota Grocers Association is a state trade association representing the food industry since 1897. We have over 200 retail members with nearly 1,100 stores statewide, We also have approximately 110 distributor and manufacturer partners. Our member companies employ over 125,000 union and non-union Minnesotans, and the food industry is the backbone of Minnesota's economy, providing one out of 20 jobs in our state. Minnesota has a very unique culture with hundreds of small, independent, locally grown grocery stores and convenience stores who are the cornerstones of our community. They create jobs, they support local charities, and provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. The average sale per customer transaction in your local grocery store is around $31. Our average customer stops in about 1.6 times a week. The average family of four has a weekly shopping basket of about $128. The retail food industry typically operates on a net profit margin of around 1%. Currently, our members pay all costs surrounding the collection of state sales tax and the remittance to the Department of Revenue. These costs include employee training, point-of-sale systems programming, equipment updatings, accounting system setups, as well as execution of state audits. And for any of those that have experienced a state audit, you know that these can take a multitude of staff hours, even when you are following the letter of the law. As the State Trade Association, we have produced a book that we distribute biannually to our members to help them navigate the taxability and intaxability and administer the sales tax programs. The bill before you, House File 69, allows for a sales and use tax vendor allowance collection that will be reimbursed to your local retailer at 1% of the amount of sales and use tax collected and remitted to the state. Your local grocer would receive around $400 to $500 annually under this proposal, and this compensation is significant to our bottom line. This is not a new concept being proposed. About 28 other states currently allow retailers to have vendor allowances, and about 50% of those states are on streamlined sales tax. In addition, Minnesota passed legislation in 2013 that acknowledged the continued and ongoing costs of a business for collecting fees on behalf of the state. And this provided an ongoing reimbursement allowance, which we already file on our tax returns. A grocery store is at the heart of your community, and as the heart, we are essential to allowing Main Street, Minnesota to flourish and to create an atmosphere of economic growth. However, brick-and-mortar businesses continue to be impacted by higher costs, burdensome mandates, and increased regulation. This legislation supports growth on Main Street, Minnesota by providing a reinvestment in your grocery and convenience stores of the state. We thank Representative Davids and Representative Bob Detmer for their leadership. Thank you, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, and members, for a committee that doesn't have any rules, we got a lot of rules, because I just want to point an error that I made. I had this passed out in support of House File 69. This should have had my name on it, so I apologize to the committee for that. And so as members have bills and you have things that you want to pass out, let's make sure there's a name on it. Sorry about that. But this is from me. We need to identify items that are coming around to members. Okay. Next.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Bruce Houston. I work for the members of the Minnesota Retailers Association. As the name suggests, we're a group of retailers across the state, about 60% in the metro here from a membership perspective, about 40% in greater Minnesota. And we represent large, medium, and small retailers. So we define a small retailer as a one- or two-shop type operation, a mid-sized retailer, maybe 2 to 6 stores, and a large retailer above that. So proud to represent that constituency. Thank you for offering this bill. As Ms. Poole explained, this is actually a very important bill for retailers and a very Main Street-friendly bill relative to Minnesota state tax policy. I'm going to try not to duplicate testimony that you already heard today, but just accentuate a couple other points. As Ms. Poole mentioned, there's some great costs that actually businesses incur in administering being frontline sales tax collectors for the state, including all the accounting and remitting type activities and auditing activities that you heard about. You also heard about how when we process a transaction, in a great majority of transactions, they are processed via credit card. Think of your own personal shopping habits. Even if you go to the convenience store with a $3 purchase, you tend to swipe a card today. So those swipe card fees are definitely impacting retailers. In fact, a lot of retailers end up being very aggravated by the fact that if somebody buys something taxable for $100, they collect about $7 in tax. Even on a very conservative 3.5% type basis, that means that retailer is retaining $6.75, but remitting $7 to the state. So that's where, in addition to the costs of administering, that's where some of the hard costs come in that make it difficult for retailers. So we certainly support the efforts of this committee to take a look at this and have a great conversation about it. I think as members of the committee, if you think about retailers in your community and those that you interact with, if you have a conversation with them about this and how they would feel about it, one thing they're going to tell you is this isn't a big windfall for retailers. Retailers and business owners are not going to get rich off a 1% vendor collection allowance. What it does is really just help offset those costs that they're already incurring and feels very friendly to them. So again, thank you for considering it. On justification for what some of these costs are, there was a study done in 2006 done by PricewaterhouseCoopers that I could certainly make available for a public-private partnership that included NCSL, the Federation of Tax Administrators, a few private companies, et cetera, and it looked at what are the costs of administering for a frontline sales tax collector, how much does it cost? And the conclusion was that it costs about a little over 3% for the average retailer. So of what they collect in sales tax and remit, it costs about 3% of that money to administer that tax. What's interesting for small retailers, that number jumps fairly greatly, as you'd expect. It's almost 13.5%. So your small neighborhood retailers are having about 13.5% of the money that they collect. It's what's costing them to administer the system. Mid-sized retailers, somewhere around 5%, and large retailers, just a little over 2%. So you average that out, that gets to be that 3%. So when I say this is a very important bill for retailers across the state, it's especially important for those small and mid-sized retailers that really feel the heavy impact of the costs of administering the system. With that, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I have a testifier with me today. Her name is Hillary Fetter. She's on our board of directors at the Retail Association, runs a small business on Main Street, so a Main Street retailer on Main Street in Hopkins, Minnesota, and I'm sure she'd enjoy giving some testimony if you'd indulge that.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is Hillary Fetter. My company is Hillary's Personalized Gifts. We're on Main Street in Hopkins. We've been there for 25 years and enjoy doing business there. My involvement in the retailers has been extensive, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide some thoughts on sales tax collection and vendor reimbursement. My company helps individuals and companies thank, recognize, honor, express gratitude through personalized gifts and promotional products. By the nature of what I do, probably more than 75% of the transactions that happen with my company are shipped somewhere. And when somebody calls me, I'm telling you, sometimes they don't even know the zip code. We're looking up the zip code. Then we're looking up the four digits beyond the zip code to know how we need to tax that particular transaction. So we incur costs when we're actually doing the invoice process, and it takes a long time to do that. And then we actually incur costs again at that month end when we're putting all the tax that we've collected all month together to be sure that we're remitting it correctly and appropriately. So it takes two different individuals, one who's actually doing the invoicing, one who actually manages more of our general finances, to manage the tax collection that we take in. We do, obviously, it's been said here today, take 100% of that burden. About 98% of our transactions happen by credit card, so we too feel the same pain when it comes to paying our merchant account transaction fees, and then we're paying the sales tax on the merchant account transaction fees that have gone to the merchant, the ability to actually use the merchant fee system. It has been a long time since we've even had just one tax code. When we went into business 25 years ago, Minnesota, I don't remember the rate, but it didn't matter where we were shipping in the state. I didn't have to worry about it. It was either in-state or out-state. And based on the nature of business and the complexities that have happened, different counties, different cities needing different tax rates, it's become extremely complex for us to both manage and be sure we're remitting correctly. The training, when we do have turnover in either of the positions that handle this in my company, is extensive. It's probably one of the larger learning curves that we have, and making sure that we're always on top of it, because we have actually gone through a sales tax audit. I'd be happy to say we came out extremely clean. It takes a lot of work to make sure that that is happening. I don't know that I have a lot of new testimony. I think you've heard most of what I would bear, but as a small retailer, we definitely feel the pain that comes along with both collecting and then remitting correctly and appropriately sales tax each month.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Poole, Mr. Newstead, or Ms. Fetter? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and ask two out of the three, or all three can get in. all of you have referenced interchange fees, the credit card swipe fees that you're assessed. If I use my credit card at the grocery store, mm-hmm. or use my credit card at your gift shop, I believe it was, mm-hmm. or I buy a pair of shoes or whatever, do you, that interchange fee, do you deduct that from the cashier's wages?
Ms. Poole?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, no, we do not.
Representative Dabney?
I mean, it's a cost of doing business, so, but it is not a direct deduct, excuse me.
Representative Dabney?
If the other two testifiers could answer the same question.
Representative, I'm not familiar with many models that would either do that, account it against a clerk's. In fact, I know no one that does that. You don't often see, very rarely, in fact, I can't think of a single instance where a retailer might be charging that fee back to a customer.
Okay, that is a
good enough.
Well, Representative Dabney, you have the floor.
I think Ms. Federer was looking to...
My only comment was going to be, not only do we not take it out of their salary, but when on incentives and rewards, we actually provide incentives and rewards for employees when we're on a tax slate, making sure that we are so accurate and handing it in right. They actually get rewarded for the accuracy of the work that they're doing, as opposed to billing it against their actual wages.
Okay. Mr. Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifiers.
Maybe to Mr. Neustadt, you kind of piqued my interest there. When you go into a retailer and it says, you know, this much, it costs this much, but if you use a credit card, it's another dollar or something, can you do that?
It is not done. I think that's the, Mr. Chair, that simple question is, you don't see that.
Well, I can, Mr. Neustadt, I do. Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Poole?
What?
No. Ladies first.
Mr. Chair, with the new guidance that had passed at the federal level, you do have the ability to charge a swipe fee currently. Not many retailers do it because it obviously puts you at a potential competitive disadvantage, but some may choose to. You see cash incentives. This gets us way into a very complicated area, but it has to do with also your credit card agreement. But the federal government has said that we, by law now, can charge a surcharge for those swipe fees.
Oh, so it's legal. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Being that we're talking about the swipe fee being a cost to business, and this is for the three of you, at one time, a lot of people would write checks, and sometimes you'd go into a business and they'd have them on display with the ones that had bounced. And so the swipe fee is one question, but now we've shifted our economy to very few people probably writing checks any longer when they're making a purchase. In which way do you typically come out better? Having checks that bounced historically, you know, when everybody was doing that, or now with everybody using a credit card, but you're now experiencing a fee on that? And if each of the three of you could comment. And then, Mr. Chairman, like you, on that fee, there's a business that I go into frequently that if you use your credit card, they charge a fee. And then the other side is that I've got a couple businesses that I go into that give you a discount for cash. So they're handled it. That whole question is handled differently in different places. But my question is comparing when you would get bad paper, and maybe in Wayzata you didn't get any bad paper, I don't know, or maybe more. But at any rate, if they could respond to that.
Mr. Neustadt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I haven't actually seen any studies on lately anyway on the internal cost of processing a check versus cash versus a credit card or item engaged in a swipe fee. The interesting about swipe fees is that it makes it very easy to start to calculate those costs because you have a direct percent that you see on a monthly basis. But I have not actually seen any studies that kind of compare different currencies, including some of the interesting and new currencies out there today.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I think the answer to the question is probably that most retailers have shifted to credit cards from checks, and so they must have viewed that as an economic incentive, even though there is a swipe fee. But if the others could respond.
Ms. Fetter?
I actually don't know that I would call it an economic incentive. I think it's personal preference. People just don't carry cash, and now that we're even being able to start using your smartphone for some, you know, directly out of that, watching very forward-thinking consumers choose that route. I think it's a matter of convenience and carrying as little as you have to. I don't think that we discourage or encourage people to write checks, or we see a higher fee based or lower based on their method of payment. It's their choice, not ours.
Ms. Poole?
Mr. Chair, I would agree, and the challenge comes, I think, also in the swipe fees are set by the banks, and there's, again, many complicated layers as to how you run transactions. You heard our previous testifier talk about, I mean, even at the Grocers Association, to be honest, we do most of our transactions via phone. We're not able to swipe. We're paying 1 to 1.5% higher on everything that we're doing. So I think it is not a more cost-effective, but it is a consumer-driven directive, so we have to answer our consumers.
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, there's a popular restaurant that I go to quite a bit. It's actually in Joe Mullery's district, but
White
just
Castle?
Out of mine. No, not White Castle. But they have a sign up, no checks. Mm-hmm. But yet they also have next to it that they accept all the major credit cards. So there must be an economic reason for that, and I'm assuming that it's probably because of the cost of processing checks. I know there's a fee if you process over so many in a month or whatever as the average consumer. And then there's also the cost of what I was referencing earlier, insufficient funds or bounce checks or whatever. So there must be some reason that the swiping of the card is a better alternative than accepting checks. And, of course, we all know the best one probably to accept is cash.
Amen.
I think.
Ms. Bull?
Mr. Chair, the other point that I do think is notable is there's probably also a misconception when we talk about insufficient funds on checks. There is the opportunity also to have insufficient funds on credit card transactions through fraud, and so there is an equal, if not greater, potential loss there as well, and I think in testimony, when you get into the credit card discussion and the interchange discussion, there's also a perception that that is paid by the credit card companies, but really those are charged back to the retailers. So I don't think it's quite as simple of a calculation as we'd like it to be sometimes.
President Carlson?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Newstead?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I might have misunderstood your question earlier, but it goes to Representative Carlson's point, too. Each business model is different. Depending on the type of retailer, where they are, and their costs associated internally, it may be cheaper for one retailer to handle a check versus a merchant swipe card, et cetera. So whether it's a retailer offering a discount, I think, as you maybe mentioned, 3 cents off gas if you pay with cash, all these models, there isn't necessarily a good general model that you can apply. It really does come down to what the retailer experiences, what their internal costs are, and back to Ms. Fetter's point, it's largely customer-driven as well.
Ms. Fetter?
Mr. Chair, so the actual, one of the businesses in my community, literally right next door, they actually don't accept checks, they don't accept credit cards, it's cash only. And they've chosen that route. They're at their dry cleaner. Their average transaction is probably anywhere from $7 to $15, depending on what you're picking up. And the fees on either checks that are fraudulent or the credit card fees are too much for them to bear. So their choice not to do that also limits a population of pool of people that will then choose to shop there or do their business, their service there, because it impedes the fact on the way that they go about doing their business. So it is extremely complex. It's not just black and white. There's a whole lot of gray in the middle.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think there's some misunderstanding or maybe some clarification that I see, at least, and that is, you know, in some of the discussions we've had, and I think Representative Dabney talked about, well, isn't the swiping fees figured in on the cost of everything, so therefore should there be no impact? But the reality is that overhead is developed on the price of the product and not on the tax after the fact. And the same thing, I think, is true of the discussions about are there discounts given or whatever. It's based upon the price of the product, not after the price of the tax included with it. So tax is always on top of all of these other things that are built in, and the cost of maintaining that tax collection is a cost that everybody deals with. As to the point, there are gasoline companies that have a margin of about 8 cents per gallon. I think that's a state law. No less than that can be charged above the retail price of gasoline. When you get to $4 at 2% cost for the credit cards, all of a sudden your fee actually costs you more than what you paid for the gas. And so I think there's a lot of people looking at how transaction fees occur and the cost of that and how it's developed. So just food for thought.
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask if the place that's next door to you that does business that doesn't take any credit cards or checks, only cash, is that a bank by chance?
No, the dry cleaner. Dry cleaner and Taylor.
Okay.
Representative Earhart?
That's it.
Any other questions? Department of Revenue, any comments? You're okay? You know, I said you'd never have to apologize. I guess there may be a situation where you would, and that's if you opposed any of my bills, Mr. Cummings.
We're not coming up.
Okay. Mr. Cummings, if you're not assistant by the end of this session, something's wrong. Deputy. Mr. Gilbertson.
Chair David's a bank at U.S. Bank. I've got a...
Have a chair. State your name for the record and who you represent.
Brian Gilbertson again from Magic Bounce. Chair Davids, I want to mention that I've got a U.S. bank account, and when I deposit cash, I get charged a fee to deposit that cash. So none of this is fee-free. If I walk into the bank with 60 grand in cash, they throw a big fee at me when I do that. So, you know, whether it's checks, whether it's credit cards, whether it's cash, a business get some kind of fee.
Mr. Gilbertson, if you walk into a bank with 60,000 cash,
I get yelled at by the banker.
No, they'll call the police.
And money laundering. Just took my class on that. Any other questions? Mr. Gilbertson, were you finished?
That is a real thing. I do walk into the bank with 60 grand in cash because I sure as heck don't want that on me. It does happen, and there are fees that are assessed when that happens. When you guys hear cash, you're probably thinking there's no fees. But you know, if you have a business that says that they're only taking cash, I guess I'd wonder if they're even paying all their taxes to begin with. So I am a company that does remit sales tax, that does actually bring my cash to the bank, unlike a lot of these others, and it can be 60 grand in cash all once if I'm out at a festival or an event.
I think I'm going to get in the bouncy house business.
Well, wait till you see payroll.
Oh, okay. Any other questions for any of the testifiers? Mr. Newstead, you have a comment?
Just a final thought, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just I know we got a little deep in the weeds on how customers pay, et cetera. I would encourage members to just spend a little time this weekend at their favorite retailer and ask them about the cost of collecting sales tax and how much they would appreciate a little relief. I think it's something that's definitely worth taking a look at. I encourage members to do that. Thank you, sir.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I noticed that your bill is considerably more expensive. It's $100 million biennium or more. Why is that? Are we doing different things with that than we are with Dittmer's, Representative Dittmer's bill?
Ms. Dalton, why am I more expensive than Dittmer? They're delicious.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's because there is no cap on it. A place like Target would get a 1% on all of their.
Representative Earhart, the bill's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Any other questions? I will lay House File 69 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, thank you very much for your work today. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.